All right, folks, we are back on the Flexi.com T-Talk podcast, PGA Championship wrap-up episode, and the week before the Flagstick Open, which we are fired up. Well, at least I am. Scott's basically going to work the whole time and just say my name as I dunk a few into the water on the first tee. Speaking of that name, Scott McLeod, how are you today, buddy?
Doing great. Excited that we've got a major that we can talk about. The Flagstick Open, of course.
Of course, yeah.
I mean, the PGA Championship, which would be great. I mean, yeah, it was fun viewing. Fun to have a major back after 3 million days.
I agree. Sunday was amazing. I didn't catch too much of Saturday. Thursday, Friday was great. It was awesome having ESPN do some stuff as well, which was nice to see golf shots because, you know, the other couple.
They don't like to go there. That.
Yeah.
Don't go there. CBS was the actual team that was doing the ESPN stuff. Most people don't know that. So don't chew on them because it was the same team.
Whatever. It still felt like I was seeing more golf. But I'll give them credit. I felt like they did a good job handling the chaos come Sunday because there was chaos. Like at one point, we're like, yeah, give us an 8-way playoff, right? And everyone, I mean, at that point, people should have just been betting no playoff like crazy because someone had to do what Morikawa did. And that shot going into on 16 was just amazing. What a great finish. And I love the setup of the golf course that they allowed, you know, a great finish to happen, an exciting finish right through.
Yeah, Kerry Hag, who does the setup for the PGA, did an amazing job, always does. Gave that opportunity for the drivable par four. Obviously, Morikawa took advantage of that, you know, just like he did at the workday at Muirfield Village. And as you said, a lot of players in the mix didn't think it was going to finish in regulation, thought we were going to go to that aggregate playoff. Didn't know how many players were going to be in that group. They were announcing that, you know, it would have been one group no matter what. So that would have been really cool if we had all of a sudden seen like seven players at a Muni, you know, having to go down the fairway for these three holes for the playoff. But, you know, Morikawa made that not happen. But, you know, certainly it was a great ending to a fabulous week.
What a dream that would have been. I wish we had it. Similar to how I wish a few years ago we had Dustin Johnson just two putt that 18th hole and say three putts and Jordan Spieth picked up that U.S. Open. I would have loved that 18 hole playoff, but we didn't get to see it. Now, I just want to give credit to myself. A long time ago when Colin Morikawa first won and Matt Wolff first won, somebody asked in the mailbag, who do you think is going to win a major first? And thinking back, I said, Colin Morikawa. I believe you may have also said that or yeah, you did. And, you know, shout out to us. We're clearly in the know. What a hot take it was for both of us to pick the guy that had yet to miss a cut at that point, picked up his win in like his third start. Just a ball striking dream. And, you know, he's set up for major championships. And, you know, I don't want to get too far ahead of us. Maybe there is a question in the mailbag. Like, how many do you think he's going to win? If so, I'm not going to answer it at that point either. But, you know, the guy's game is just perfect at this point. Other than those short putts that, you know, he's had a couple scares on, this guy, it's hard to find a problem in his game where you're like, he really needs to work on this.
Yeah, he's a really tidy player in that, you know, he's not exceptional in one category over another. A lot of players or a lot of coaches are really talking about sort of he plays the game properly. And when I say properly, it means he executes. And a lot of other golfers, a lot of other pros go, you know, he's doing what you're supposed to be doing. And other players say they just don't have the discipline to do it. And, you know, in this time that a lot of people have been talking about the Bauman gouge, and obviously they're talking about, you know, Bryson came into play, you know, this weekend as well. This is a guy who's 113 miles an hour clubhead speed off the tee. So he's not, you know, he's basically average distance on the PGA Tour.
107th for distance on the PGA Tour this year.
Yeah. So I mean, it's not like he's, you know, hitting it out there 380. And, you know, we know going into this week, there was a lot of discussion about the golf course playing longer because of the thick fog temperatures and stuff like that. Didn't really matter. You know, he got around there, did what he had to do, and really, you know, didn't look nervous. And that was the impressive part. And obviously having won a couple times previously probably helped the nerves a little bit. Maybe not having the spectators there would maybe help it as well. That's kind of a little bit of a... Yeah, so maybe he didn't get quite as nervous that way. But, you know, also, you don't have like a 5-stroke lead at the end. You're basically here just rolling in there going, I've got to separate myself from everyone else. And you don't even know if that's going to be good enough as well. So maybe because of those circumstances, it might've made a little bit easier, but in any case, he's a major champion at the age of 23 years old.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we gave ourselves credit there at the start about picking him over Matt Wolf. Matt Wolf was in his first major and made just an epic run on Sunday as well. Obviously didn't get it done, but, you know, posted a score that people had to look at going in. And, you know, that can, Tiger's done that in the past. A lot of guys have done that in the past and still won. Danny Willett posted a score and backdoored his way into a green jacket. But, you know, as we said, there's just nothing this guy does wrong. You know, tee to green, shots gained, he's third. You know, approach to the green, he's second on the year. He's just a ball striker's dream, doesn't do anything poorly. And, you know, I think the stat, which we've outlined before with him, that still for me is a huge stat. I doubt many people would actually look at it, but is that approach is from 175 to 200. These guys get that number
a lot,
10, 12 times around. Like, it's a lot, right? They have, you know, what was that, one par four, 520, right? Yeah. For a guy like him that hits it, you know, just under 300 off the tee, well, he's going to have that 175 to 220 in every single time. So you better be good at it. And clearly he's dominating at it and picked up his first major. Clearly knows something, you know, from the stats perspective that he needs to work on.
It's going to be pretty funny, fun to watch. I mean, so that's 27 pro events. He's averaging over $250,000 a start.
Crazy.
For each of those, which is, you know, wild when you think about it as far as the money that's out there these days. And you know what? It's just going to be fun. And I think already, you know, we talked about Wolf before. We've talked about Hovland. We're talking about Morikawa. We're talking about their potential. Well, you know, obviously Morikawa's already won a major. So he's, you know, giving us a glimpse of that potential already.
Oh, the comparisons are coming.
Tiger, oh, they are. And we, Jack, yeah, we saw the Morikawa. Tiger. Yeah. We saw all those already. But I think what the cool part is that, you know, come Sunday, once Tiger was off the golf course, we didn't hear much about him the rest of the day. And I really think, you know, that just shows you what a good spot golf is in the fact that people were entertained by the product that was out there, whether it was Finau, DeChambeau, Wolf, you know, Scheffler, who, you know, a lot of people didn't know at this point, but obviously a young talent as well. DJ, you know, the veteran out there, Casey, another veteran out there. But otherwise, you know, you've got a real nice cadre of players that are definitely going to carry this game into the next era.
100%. Let's talk DJ though. This guy, I'm going to give you a rundown of his major championships. This guy could have six majors by now. Obviously didn't get it done on Sunday, went in with a 1-stroke lead, had it up to two very early. But you know, didn't get it done, finished T2, you know, finished, you know, tied for second with our boy. You know, if anybody is here like, oh, now you're a Paul Casey fan, go back to episode 1, 2, 3. I think I mentioned him every single time from like 1 to 20, and then he disappeared off the planet. Popeye, he's my guy. I wanted him to win right at the end. Didn't even expect him to be there. Didn't even know he was playing in it, to be honest with you. So I wasn't picking him with our bet from last week, which we'll get to at some point here. But let's talk DJ, because this guy couldn't get it done on Sunday. And as I said, you could have six major championships at this point. I'm going to give a quick breakdown. So 2010, the U.S. Open at Pebble Beach. He has a 3-shot lead going on into Sunday. He could have shot, what was it, plus five? Yeah, like, yeah, he could have shot 77 that day and still won. Shot 82, GMAC wins. You know, the rest is history. 2010 at the PGA at Whistling Straits. Everyone remembers the bunker waste area incident. You know, gets the penalty stroke. Martin Keimer wins. 2011 Open, making a great charge on the back nine, hits one.
St. George's, yeah,
way out of bounds, and here comes Darren Clarke to pick up his win. There's kind of a trend here where these guys that you don't even ever expect to win majors, they end up winning the major. Then, you know, mentioned earlier, 2015 at the U.S. Open at Chambers Bay, that 3-putt on 18. Not only did he lose, but he wasted all of us a sick day on that Monday that I had already pre-called in because I was ready to just sit on my couch all day and watch the U.S. Open. So at this point, he could have four. He ends up getting it done at the U.S. Open. But even at that point in 2016, there's still controversy because he touched the ball on the green and he didn't even know what score he was making. And then on 18, he hits it to an inch and he taps it in and he wins the U.S. Open. And then again, this week, 2020, he goes in one up, you know, at that point, there was not really a big story. The only story of it is maybe Brooks comments going in that Dustin only has one major, which I think if you're trying to get in the head of Dustin Johnson, there's not much in there to get in the head of. So kind of empty comment, but just, it's so weird that this is Dustin's career majors. And I'm sure we could do this for 100 different guys, but it just feels odd that one day I'm going to say to my kids, yeah, he only had one major. He had 98 wins, but he had one major.
I guess you can look at it a couple ways. I mean, obviously it's a, you know, a tragedy, it seems, that he should have won more of these, but you know, the other side of it, he's gotten himself in the conversation, which a lot of other players don't. But you would expect by this point, for a guy who's got 21 wins on the tour, you would expect he would be able to finish on some of those and maybe even, you know, look like he cares a little bit more about it, I guess. But, you know, he's got more majors to do it. I mean, they're not, you're not always going to take advantage of every single one that you do, but you're right. It's just sort of weird circumstances for every single one of his stories. Maybe it's just because we pay attention to him more. We have that expectation of him. We would expect with his talent level that he's going to just jump out there and dominate one of these at some point.
Yeah. It's going to happen. Like, he's going to win one or two more. I got to believe it. But, I mean, he is, you know, he's in the prime of his career. That mid-30s is generally when these guys pick up a ton of majors. That might be changing with this influx of guys coming in now. Let's talk Brooks' comments real quick. Brooks going to Sunday, two back. You know, he should have had all that confidence in the world. He's the back-to-back champion. He was playing well. He just came off, you know, he should have almost won the week prior, came off that other than that horrible 18th hole and, you know, make some comments. I didn't really have a problem with it. These guys are best buddies, but kind of dumb comments to make and then back it up with what happened out there. But I think Tiger summed it up as well with his comments after his 67. Someone asked, is it too late? That's just golf, I guess. And Brooks just didn't have the swing. We've all been there.
Yeah, I think everybody wants the perfect narrative all the time. And, you know, we all of a sudden think that just because we talk about something that, you know, something is going to play out. Obviously, Brooks was going for his third PGA in a row.
He beat one guy on Sunday.
Yeah, he ended up T29. And, you know, that's golf. And I mean, you know, there's lots of other cases of where it happened. Should he have made the comments? I don't know. I don't think it was that big of a deal. I mean, he was saying what he wanted to say. I mean, we can't have it both sides. We've talked about that before. We can't sit there and go, we want honesty from athletes. We want them to be raw or whatever. And then all of a sudden, you know, when they do that, go, oh, well, maybe he should just shut his mouth. I mean, that's not what, I mean, I'd rather have the honesty than just, you know, shutting up and not saying anything at all.
Oh, I agree 100%. It was great. I loved it. It's theater. It's content. We're in the content biz. Say everything every week. But I love actually Rory's comments even more, where he said, you know, like, I don't know why you'd say that about DJ. The guy's got 20 wins. It's 3-4 times as much as Brooks. That being said, every single guy, if you gave the option of Brooks' career, if it ended today, and Dustin's career, if it ended today, you're taking Brooks every single time.
Yeah, they'd take the majors. They'd take the big trophies on the shelves. They've cemented their legacy. I mean, we think back over the years, and, you know, it could be Andy North that we're talking about. You know, this guy won 2 U.S. Opens and a Westchester Classic, but people know him because he won 2 U.S. Opens. So, I mean, that's the thing. It's about major. You don't know who he is, but it's about the majors as far as the significance of a player. So yeah, I think anybody would take that and go away. And you know what, in the end, he's got all the cash that he needs. So I mean, if he's just playing golf to be a professional golfer, that means making money to afford you everything else that you can do in your life. It's not always about, you know, being the Tiger Woods of the game.
I agree 100%. I was all for Rory's comments. You know, I'm all for these type of things. I think what Brooks did wrong was, you know, there was a bunch of other guys he didn't make comments about. Maybe if that was his plan, what he should have done is went through and been like, okay, yeah, DJ's only won one. This person, you know, he's never even, like, if that's the case, you got to call out everyone in front of you.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
the thing is, you couldn't call out 27 guys in front of you, Brooks, because we would have been here all day. So,
well, I think the call out too, though, is the prompting of the media as well. I mean, they're wanting the story to play out how they want. So they're going to call out, you know, especially at press conferences, they're going to ask the questions that get them the storyline that they want. So if they come in there and want to talk about Brooks, everybody knows he's already won two, but they all know that, you know, he's talked about other players and he's talked about his position in the game. So, hey, why not pull on that thread a little bit, pull on that and get something out of it. So I think as a result of that, that becomes, you know, the bigger story, the talked about story, whereas it wouldn't be otherwise.
I agree 100%. Well, that's it for the major week. What did you think about Harding Park though? I loved it as we kind of touched on the setup. I love going to Munis. I think that's what the PGA Championship should be, is like bring them to the Munis of the United States. And, you know, if you do it that way, like, why can't we bring them to the Munis of Canada? They never will, but you know what I mean? Like, we can dream for a little bit. But I think that's where we should be. Play it in a place where everyone else can go and play. And I think the US Open does that well as well. But, you know, what were your thoughts overall on the golf course?
Yeah, I love the golf course. I mean, I think the big cypress trees, as we talked about, really, you know, provide the setting right there on Lake Merced. The setup was fair. You know, it's a good enough golf course to handle the best players in the world, but, you know, come Monday, they can cut down the rough a little bit. And then Joe Average, you know, if somebody lives in San Francisco, they can pay the city rate and go out there and play. And you're right. US Open, it's a mix sometimes. Obviously there's courses that they're able to do that, other ones they can't. We know, for an example, we were discussing it, a little bit on Friday when we had a game, you know, everybody would go to Glen Abbey and try to hit that shot that Tiger hit on 18 to, you know, to imitate the pros. So if players can go, and maybe some kid right now is going to go to Harding Park this week and be inspired by what he saw in Colin Morikawa, and, you know, 20 years down the road, we might be talking about them.
Oh, and that pin, too, that they had on Sunday for Morikawa's shot on 16, they'll set that up, say it's like every Sunday. There's that experience, and that's what we talk about in golf, experience. Yeah. And hopefully Harding Park, you know, listens and takes that in consideration, and I don't doubt they won't. Like, why would you not, right? It's going to be great. But expect a slow final three holes once you get to Harding Park, because everyone's just trying to relive that memory. Wyndham Championship this week, we're not going to dive too far into it, but this is kind of the week for guys' final stretch to get into the playoffs. Charles Schwartzel sitting, got all my tongue all twisted up with his last name, but he's sitting on the bubble there. Some big names too outside. Zach Johnson outside there. I saw Jason Duffner outside there. You know, we're cheering for guys like Michael Gligic, you know, 166 right now. This is a huge week for him. You know, Martin Traynor, Kevin Tway, Roger Sloan. There's a ton of guys that are outside of that 125. So big week to get in the playoffs. Now we're in a weird year where your card is going to extend till next year anywhere, which kind of helps and doesn't actually put too much pressure on a lot of these guys. But, you know, that I feel for me, that's a reason why this week it just doesn't bring them that much entertainment value because of that change.
Yeah, it falls flat. There's not really that drama. We already know the Wyndham Rewards bonus, the $2 million is already locked up by Justin Thomas, so there's nothing to play for there. Really, they're just playing for extra cash to get into those FedEx Cup playoffs. But those players, as you mentioned, already have their cards. You know, if they had their card this year, they're going to sustain that through next year. So certainly not to look a lot to look forward here. I like the golf course. Sedgefield's pretty cool. Managed to play it a few years ago, and it's pretty neat layout, but, you know, again, this doesn't really bring a lot to me just because they really are not playing for a lot.
No, quick thing. Remember Akshay Bahata?
Oh, yes.
He's in the field. I think, when did he like turn pro? He's like that kid that turned at like 17 or something like that.
Yeah. So he's 18 now, and he's actually, he had a press conference today. So it's his seventh start on the PGA Tour this year. He has missed six cuts. So, you know, he played one event on the Korn Ferry Tour last year, made the cut at that. He hasn't broken 70. I had a look at his record today. It's not like he's been shooting a million, but I mean, his scoring average is just a hair over 73, which will get you nothing but, you know, take a lap on the PGA Tour.
Pretty much a cup of tea. You don't even get coffee. That costs extra. Just quickly, you mentioned Justin Thomas. Morikawa hopped into the potential player of the year category, I think, here with that major. And I know it's only the first one, but, you know, he picks up a bunch more top tens, which isn't outside of the question. Watch out. I think, you know, we thought Brendan Todd maybe has locked it in. Then Justin Thomas picks up that third win. If he picks up another win and Justin doesn't, it's going to go to Morikawa, in my opinion. But we'll get to that.
Think about that. Think about how Xander Schauffele performed in winning the Tour Championship. Anybody could do something in the playoffs here. And, you know, if he can win one of the significant events here in the playoffs, yeah, he certainly could. He could jump to the lead.
100%. What a finish in the LPGA for some. Poor Lydia Ko going for her second win in like 4 years.
Up by five.
Up by five. How many? Five, six to play.
Yeah.
Double bogey. Had a one stroke lead going into 18 and double bogeys. Danielle Kang pars it. And Danielle Kang goes back to back. She brooksed it.
She did. And you know what? It makes it hard. I mean, Danielle Kang obviously did something impressive as far as winning the two starts in Ohio, the restart for the LPGA Tour. So for her to do that is incredible. But, you know, you certainly couldn't take your eyes away from Lydia Ko. I looked at the leaderboard early and I thought, oh, this is a wash. You know, you're pretty much, you know, getting ready to write up every headline with Ko, you know, going to get her 16th win or 79th top 10 at, you know, at her age of 23 already. And then boom. I mean, it just, you know, I think a lot of golfers could relate. I mean, I think everybody that listens to the show could definitely relate to what happened to her on 18.
Oh, 100%. You know, and it's going to happen this week at the Flagstaff. Somebody's going to be coming down the stretch thinking they're either going to win their division or win the overall and pick up a nice new set of sticks or whatever the championship prize is this week, which maybe we'll touch on in a little bit. And someone's going to dunk it in the water on 18. It's going to happen, right? You know, that's golf's tough, man. Or someone's going to think they had a shot and they're going to put up a 9 on the first hole on the first day because they dunked 2 in the water and forgot to drop it in the drop zone, instead teed it up. Who knows, right? Those things happen. You know, don't be embarrassed. You get over it with a lot of therapy. But, you know, it sucked to see Lydia go out in that fashion. But here's the thing. Lydia Ko, I thought she was like 30. She's been around forever.
She won her first pro event, New Zealand Open, I believe it was, when she was 14. So, you know, but that's almost a decade ago now.
Yeah, and she won the Canadian Open 8 years ago at, well, whatever 23 minus 8 is. what's that, 17, something like that? There you go. Nope. Like, wow.
Keep going.
15 anyways. Years old. There you go. You got it.
Exactly. Yeah. There you go. Nailed it. I mean, yeah.
Like, see, like Dustin's brother reading a yardage book. Did you see that story?
I did. Oh, lost the yardage book.
So they lost the yardage book, which I thought was hilarious, which is like, and the best part is he realized it was in the bottom of his golf bag in the middle of the round, which, you know, in classic fashion, he's like, I'm not going to go get it and empty it out. But how funny would it be and how perfect would it have been for Harding Park if Dustin Johnson had every single club out of his bag and he had it flipped over and he was trying to shake out his yardage book? It would have been perfect. But it ended up going back to this story that came a few years ago. And I'm just trying to find it real quick about Dustin Johnson and his brother with yardage books. So this story came from, the Ryder Cup or the President's Cup or whatever it was a few years ago. So I'll just read this tweet out there. It says, to put it politely, on tour, the Johnson brothers of Columbia, South Carolina, are not known for having a cerebral approach. There are so many funny stories, says tour player Billy Horschel. At Doral last year, we get to 16. And for Dustin, it's a drivable par 4. They're going through the yardage guide and they can't figure out how far it is to the green. After a long while, Dustin says, bro, you want to hit? I said, sure, because I was laying up. So I hit, and it takes them a few more minutes to pull a club. Finally, Dustin rips one onto the green. Walking off the tee, he's like, bro, AJ doesn't know how to add. He can't do numbers. Of course, Dustin couldn't figure out the yardage either.
It's so good.
Can you imagine? So you got a guy with 21 wins and his caddy They can't figure out how far it is on the green. And I mean, hey,
maybe that explains his major finishes.
I thought about that too. Yeah,
I mean, maybe that's the deal. So maybe, you know, that's a case of just, you know, those few shots during those weeks could have been something to do with that. So I know it's crazy. I mean, we talk about it all the time. I mean, if you're going to have basic skills to be a caddy, be able to, you know, pick up something that's 40 to 50 pounds, be able to walk and be able to do math. That's it. That's all you really need to do.
Pretty much. You got to know how to read and understand what you're reading, which some people don't when the first time they pick up a bag, but hey, you learn. But yeah, I just thought that was hilarious. I don't even know how we got here from Lydia Ko, but you know, happy trails to Lydia Ko and congrats to Danielle Kang for two in a row. Hopefully, you know, the LPGA keeps going on the stride they're on. That's an exciting finish. That's for sure. And a lot of people are watching. We got some Canadian golf content on this episode. Taylor Pendrith, who we've been talking about a lot, is on the episode. Before we get to Taylor Pendrith, a little bit more Canadian content. We have the Canada Life Series has started out in Victoria this week. A couple former guests on the podcast on the field, and David Byrne, Josh Whalen, and Aaron Crawford. What do you know about this golf course? Because my understanding, it hasn't been the easiest walk.
No, it's not. I mean, it's built on a Bear Mountain. They've got the mountain course and they have the valley course. They've started on the mountain course. Elevation is about, it goes up to about 1,100 feet. Very difficult walk. They had a Champions Tour event there as well. Very penal if you do not hit it online. So if you look at the scoring, you will see
pretty high.
There's a few players under par, but there are a lot of players shooting some big numbers. This is the type of golf course that it is. You're either on or you're off. There's not a lot of in between.
Yeah, and I'm sure Taylor's played it, and you know, we've been talking about this guy for weeks, how hot he is. You know, call him T2nd because he just finishes there every single week. And you know, we actually just played a golf course he had some good success on up in TPC Osprey Valley, thanks to Lawrence Applebaum and the owner of TPC Osprey Valley and Chris and his family for having us out there. What a golf mecca this place is already, and what it's going to become is, I can't wait. I was just in shock from start to finish how great this entire track was. There was one spot on the whole golf course where I realized, hey, that's not a green spot, and it took us like 17 holes, like, whoa, what happened here? And it's like, oh yeah, a little bit of mistake there. That's it. This place is perfect. I loved every minute of it.
Yeah, it continues to be, you know, revered as one of the best golf facilities in all the country. 54 holes there. And as we know, you know, we had a discussion with them about some of the plans they have coming in the future. We'll hear more about that and we'll discuss more about that in the coming months. We've been sworn to secrecy on a few things. So, but otherwise, you know what? Three great golf courses there. A great practice facility, you know, not far from the GTA, so easy for people to get to, and, you know, just quality golf. And I'm looking forward for you to have the opportunity to play the other two golf courses at some point as well.
I can't wait. But what I actually was most excited about coming out of it, if you aren't a Golf Canada member, sign up now, because the app just got upgraded and it's great, and it's getting upgraded in a few weeks again, and this thing is stunning. And this information is out there. You can go find it. We got Shot Tracer. We got GPS going in, plus all your scores. On top of that, you can actually track your stats. So not just, hey, I made this score. Did I hit the fairway? How many putts did I have? Did I get up and down? All this. So it actually is going to have things that you can actually work on and recommend for practice. Great, great app. You know, Lawrence was showing us some of the features of Shot Tracer. Luckily, the one he got of me, it was like, I think, my best drive of the day. The one he got of you, not as much, but
not,
hey,
so
you know, it was nice to see what a snap hook looked like on that, and that it recognized those type of swings.
Yeah, you know what? You're right. It's definitely a great, it's a great sort of thing to get for your Golf Canada membership. And it's a nice little add-on. I mean, we saw all the different features of it. There's a lot of things there that you would pay a lot of extra money for as well, mm-hmm. for some of the apps that you're already using, but it's neat to see where they're trying to go with the organization with Golf Canada. And, you know, we did have some great conversations with him there, and that was nice to be able to look at that app and see what they've been doing.
100%. Well, why don't we talk with a Golf Canada member? As we've said, this guy is hot this year ever since coming on the podcast before. We called it the T-Talk bump. Maybe another time coming on, he's going to get that win. So why don't we head down to Idaho and chat with fellow Canadian, one of our favorites, Taylor Pendrith. All right, folks, I'd like to welcome back to the podcast. Down from Idaho, this ain't heaven, it's Idaho. This guy's been hot ever since coming on the podcast earlier this year. We're not taking credit, though, even though we joke that he got the T-Talk bump. Taylor Pendrith, welcome back to the podcast. How are you doing today, bud?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. I'm doing good. Yeah, just getting ready for this week's event.
Well, we've been calling you Mr. T2 over the last couple weeks. What do you think of that nickname? Because it's safe to say, you know, you're on fire and just on the cuffs of picking up your first win on the Korn Ferry Tour. Describe how the game's felt over the last 4 or 5 weeks here.
Yeah, I don't mind that nickname, but I'd like to get a win. But yeah, no, it's been good. I've been playing really well, putting the ball in play, and my putting's been awesome. So I just feel like if I can get it on the greens, you know, have a good chance of making it, and just feel very confident and comfortable out there. And I've been pretty close, you know, on the weekends. I've also played really well on Sundays. I've just been, you know, kind of too far back, I guess. I've been trailing, I think, every week by, you know, 2, 3, maybe more some weeks. So I'm pretty happy with the way that I've handled myself on the weekends and just come up a little short. But all in all, it's good.
So for that tour, I mean, you know, there's so many guys that go so low there all the time. I mean, is any lead safe there? I mean, how far would you have to be ahead, do you think, to be comfortable on a Saturday night coming into a Sunday there?
Yeah, I mean, 2 weeks ago in, where were we? I can't even remember. Nebraska. I think Seth Reeves came from 8 behind and won. So, I mean, like, it's crazy. The golf courses, I feel like at this time of year, are getting a lot harder with these like playoff events. So he teed off I think like an hour before me. I shot, I think 5 under that day, and it was like a really hard day, super windy. So, I mean, it all depends really on the luck of the draw. If you can get out early and post a number, and you know, these last couple courses have been firm and fast with long rough, and it's just hard. But yeah, I mean, it would be nice to be leading going into Sunday, but yeah, I mean, it is what it is. I'm playing well, so I just gotta keep pecking away and see what happens.
I was gonna say, is that exhausting? Like, because I mean, it is professional golf. It's exhausting. We'll kind of get to that in a bit, but just knowing, like, every single time it's like, I can't even just shoot 68 today and like come up like with, you know, and be in the mix. No, every single week I got to shoot 65 basically every single day.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely makes you play more aggressive, I think, out here, just because the scores are usually very low. Like I said, except for the last couple of weeks. But like last week, I shot 1 under on the weekend and moved up like 20 spots. So it was finally playing hard. There's some long, hard golf courses coming up as well. So I'm looking forward to those. But I mean, I also don't mind the courses that you have to go and shoot 25 under to win, because it's, you know, the Mackenzie Tour is like that. So, I mean, I kind of have learned to, you got to keep making birdies and try to eliminate the bogeys or you drop a lot. But yeah, it's basically a putting contest.
Yeah, so this is your second full year out here on the Korn Ferry Tour. And last year had great success on the Mackenzie Tour. And you're having great success this year. What's the biggest difference between great success on the Mackenzie Tour and the great success on the Korn Ferry Tour, outside of obviously the money's a little bit more?
Yeah, money's definitely a little better. But, I mean, it's very similar. I feel like last year, you know, I mean, you see it even now on the Korn Ferry Tour, the guys who graduated from the Mackenzie Tour are playing really well. Paul Barjon's finished, I think, 2nd like 4 times this year. And, you know, it just shows the level of play up in Canada. So I think it was a really good path for me, I guess. It kind of taught me how to win and compete and go low. And it's very similar out here. I think there might be a little bit more depth between the players here, but I mean, it's the same thing really. It's, you know, it's just a golf tournament, and obviously the money's more and you're playing for PGA Tour cards instead of Korn Ferry Tour cards, but feels very similar. I think the golf courses might be a little harder out here, but I don't know. Maybe not. I don't know. It's very similar, honestly.
So are you having a little deja vu back to your McKenzie Tour days when, you know, you're losing in playoffs and you're finishing second and then all of a sudden you broke through because obviously, you know, it happened. Are you getting that same sort of vibe right now, the way you've been playing this year?
Yeah. I mean, I'm playing really well, you know, for basically since the restart, even the beginning of the year, I was playing pretty good. Just couldn't really kind of close it out on the weekends, but, I'm having better weekends now. And, yeah, I mean, I'm not disappointed at all in any of my second place finishes. I mean, I had a chance on 18, the second week in Texas and went for the green and hit it in the water, but needed to make eagle, and ended up finishing tied for second, which I'm fine with. But yeah, I mean, this is about the time that I got hot, I guess, last year. And, so just got to be patient and keep doing my thing and hopefully can come out on top on Sunday.
Yeah, there's a big difference, though, between last year and this year. Last year, A, well, you're on the McKenzie Tour. This year, on the Korn Ferry Tour. And B, there wasn't a damn pandemic happening globally as well. How has that changed travel and everything for you? And just, you know, the bubble life on the PGA Tour is one thing, but what's the bubble life on the Korn Ferry Tour? Because, you know, I think everyone thinks, you know, glamour when you're a professional golfer, but even from the Korn Ferry Tour to the PGA Tour, there's quite a difference in what that glamorous lifestyle looks like.
Yeah. It's weird. I mean, it's a, you know, a weird time. We haven't eaten out anywhere. Like, we basically go to the golf course and come back to our hotel, order takeout, pick it up on the way, basically order it at the golf course and get it and eat it in our hotel room and stay in the hotel every day. It's the same thing. It's, you know, it's kind of boring, but it is what it is. I'm happy that we're able to play golf and have a job during this. You know, it's great. But it's definitely weird. You know, I travel with my caddy Mitch and we've drove a lot of the events. You know, we flew to Utah on the charter plane, which is good. They have charters for us where just players and caddies are allowed on, and you have to produce a negative COVID test before you get on the plane. So that's good. That feels very safe. But then we drove from Utah to Denver, Denver to San Antonio. And then we actually drove from San Antonio back to Florida for a week off, which was a horrible drive, but we just didn't really want to be in busy airports. So I think it was like 18 or 19 hours. So not ideal, but and then we drove over to Idaho from Portland two nights ago. So it's fine. It's not, you know, I'd love to go to a restaurant and go to a patio and have a beer, but I won't be doing that until who knows.
I picture the Korn Ferry Tour charter, like the plane in Major League.
It's a little better than that.
And then like the PGA Tour planes, like Air Force One. That's how it's in my head, but maybe, yeah. I'm wrong.
I can tell you it's definitely better than that. It's good. It's they're doing it the right way. It's not bad at all.
Well, one thing that's a big difference between the McKenzie Tour and the Korn Ferry Tour is what you're playing for. And one thing that you were playing for this year was a spot in the U.S. Open, and now you've managed to earn your way to Wingfoot. What's that mean to you?
Yeah, it's awesome. Just to see that the USGA was giving our tour exemptions, and there's still five more up for grabs. So 10 Korn Ferry Tour players will be playing in the U.S. Open. It's pretty good on them to recognize, you know, I guess the talent out here, and obviously with no sectional qualifiers, it makes sense to give some spots to us. And I couldn't be happier. Never played in a major, US Open, you know, it'll be amazing. The golf course looks very difficult, but it looks like a golf course that I'm going to like. So yeah, I'm going to try and prepare and like any other week, like a Korn Ferry Tour event, and do my thing and not try to get sucked in by everything around me and distracted and just try and, you know, go and play well. I mean, I've earned my way there and there's no reason I can't play well there and make the cut, and, you know, who knows, but, so I'm just going to try and, you know, do what I always do every week and, just show up there and, ready to play.
I was going to ask, like, what do you know of Wingfoot, and how does your game, you know, match up to that golf course? You know, what's your research even looking like, or what's Mitch up to in terms of getting his job done right now?
he's out there watching the hockey game. Actually, it's intermission right now, fourth overtime, but I haven't really looked it up a whole lot. I've just, like, kind of, I don't know, glanced at it a little bit, but it looks like it's long and hard and tight and the rough's going to be up. But it's like an old school course. So, those are my favorite kind of courses to play. Probably you can probably hit driver on most holes if you want. You can, you know, it's looks like a course that's, you can play a couple different ways, but I think hitting fairways is going to be key out there. With the rough, I'm sure is going to be 5 inches long. So, yeah, I'm super pumped to get out there and check it out. I know the last time it was there, the scores were very high, so I'm assuming they'll be similar this year. So it should be a fun time, a battle.
As much as there's joy in getting your way into the U.S. Open, is there a little bit of disappointment as well, and that maybe that, you know, your family and friends can't come and share that with you?
Yeah, absolutely. It would be awesome for them to come down. I haven't seen my fiance Meg in 3 months and won't see her till the end of October, which kind of sucks. It's, you know, not ideal, but it is what it is. But it would be great for her to come and my family and friends to come and share the week with me. But obviously that can't happen. So, yeah, just me and Mitch. We'll go enjoy it and have fun.
I think
they can watch from home.
Yeah, I think you kind of, you know, brushed over what that actually is. Like, you haven't seen her in 3 months. You got 3 more months to go. You know, how hard has that been, right? Like, what, you know, not seeing family, you know, you and Mitch, you know, you're close obviously, but at the end of the day, that's, it sounds like you guys are together 24 hours a day. You better really like your caddy at that point. But like, how hard has it just been not to see each other other than just FaceTime, I guess?
Yeah, lots of FaceTiming. She's been working a lot, so she's kind of keeping busy. Yeah, it sucks. I would love to come home. You know, even I took a week off, you know, a few weeks ago and was unable. I would love to come back to Canada, but couldn't do it because I would have to quarantine, and which is, yeah, just not ideal. But yeah, we got till the end of October. I'll be back in Canada, and we've made it 3 months, so we'll be fine. A couple more months, she'll just pick up a couple more shifts and make some extra money nursing, and yeah, we'll be good. We'll be fine.
Yeah, it probably doesn't hurt that you're playing well either. It would be a lot worse if it was like, yeah, I made 3 cuts and I'm struggling to break 80 right now. but you know, a bunch of T2s, it helps. Have the wedding plans changed after the start of this year? Has she started maybe upgrading the flowers? You know, Scott and I have been there. We got to rein it in. Have you had to be like, whoa, slow down here?
I haven't got the win yet. Yeah, I hope not. I don't know. Yeah, maybe I'll get home and she'll have everything upgraded. No, I don't think she will. But yeah, it's next fall, so we. You know, I didn't really know what was going to go on this year and people's weddings being bumped back. So we just decided next fall is probably good, and had to pick a date kind of quick because I was only home for, you know, a couple of weeks after that, and couldn't really go visit many places. So it was kind of challenging, I guess, but we got a spot and looking forward to it. Yeah.
Well, one thing that's taken a little bit of upgrade lately is your world ranking. You've jumped up into the 170 range in the official world golf ranking. And, you know, that brings some different things with it. One of them is the talk about the picture of the Olympics. I mean, the Olympics was pushed back this year. That puts you up there as the, you know, the fifth Canadian. Obviously, there would be two that make it in there. Is that something you've thought about yet or thought about the possibility of?
I wouldn't say I've thought about it. I mean, I know about it. But at the same time, it's very hard to get your world rankings super high, you know, as high as those top guys, Corey and Adam on the, you know, on the Korn Ferry Tour. There's just not enough points really, but yeah, I've jumped up pretty high and it's not something I really look at. I don't really care too much, but yeah, I mean, it would be sweet, you know, who knows if I have a good week at the US Open maybe, or, you know, win a couple events. It's, I guess, a possibility. I don't know if it is mathematically, but it would be awesome. I mean, I would love to do that. So we'll see, I guess. I'm just going to keep playing and I don't know if I can get that high being on this tour for the next year and a half, but I mean, maybe it's possible.
Well, you know what? Let's just follow it up then. If you can't make Japan, I mean, is that still a goal for you? I mean, for the next Olympics to follow after that, you know, is it something for you who grew up as an athlete, you know, baseball player, playing hockey and stuff as well? But, you know, did you ever picture yourself as an Olympian?
No, never. but now that golf's back, I mean, it'd be awesome. I would, if I was, you know, qualified for it, I would go 100%. I think it'd be really cool to go and represent your country. And, you know, I love following the Olympics, you know, growing up, especially, Canadian hockey, and just seeing, you know, them compete for a gold medal is pretty sweet. So it'd be something that I would definitely enjoy doing and would go 100%. If it's a possibility. So yeah, we'll see for the following Olympics, you know, who knows.
One thing you touched on prior to that, you mentioned, you know, you're hard to get your world ranking up being on the Korn Ferry Tour for the next year and a half. You know, for some, you know, the pandemic and golf kind of helped their careers. It extends their, you know, they're on the bubble on the PGA Tour, extends them for another year. But for yourself, you know, you're playing so well. If you had kept this momentum up as of right now, or, you know, in a couple weeks' time, you probably would have been getting your PGA Tour card and be out there for next year. And unfortunately, that's not the case. And hopefully you play well enough at the US Open that things do change and you do get some starts out there. But, you know, was that unfortunate news? How'd you, you know, overcome knowing that you'll be on the Korn Ferry Tour, but that the PGA Tour isn't as close as it really should feel right now?
Yeah, I mean, when we got that announcement, I was like 60th or something on the money list, so didn't really think about it. And then now that I would have had my tour card locked up if it was a one-year thing, I mean, it is what it is. I think it's the right decision for the tour to do. They can really do anything else, I think. And I mean, it'll give me another, whatever, 25 events to kind of prepare and try and win and try and, you know, get comfortable in those uncomfortable positions. And so, I mean, I'm looking forward to it. There's a lot of golf courses on the schedule that I really like and think I can win at. So it'll be nice to play them a second time. But yeah, I mean, it'll be a long, I guess, year and a half. But I've put myself in a good position so far this year that I'll be in a good spot for next year to move up. So yeah, just going to keep, you know, trying to get in those positions on Sunday and learn how to get more comfortable and prepare myself for if I do get my card by the end of next year for the PGA Tour.
So talking about golf courses and ones that maybe you like, Hillcrest, where you're playing this week, is revered a little bit by the players for the Albertson Boise Open. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the course and what do you think your chances are out there this week?
Yeah, the course is great. It's old school course, tight fairways, tree lined, couple of short ish drivable holes. You know, we're at like 3,000 feet elevation, so the ball goes a little bit further. It's soft ish right now, but it'll get firm. I think the weather's going to be great, so they're going to get the greens going. So if you hit the fairways and the greens, it's very scoreable. If you get it going wayward, it'll be tough to get close to the pins from the rough. But, yeah, lots of wedges. I mean, I think I hit wedge almost every par four today, and the three par fives are kind of mid irons in. So Hit the fairways, and I like my chances. I mean, I'm playing good. My wedge game's nice, so just get it in play and be smart. It's, you kind of got to think a little bit out here. Once the greens get firm, they're super slopey and fast right now. Still a little soft, but they'll be. You'll have to kind of plan where you want to land the ball on the green or short of the green, I think, come Sunday.
You and I were chatting earlier today when you were heading out for your practice round. What is what's your practice round and your weekly practice routine when you first get to a golf course? And it's obviously changed since the start of the year because it's no longer pro-am. So what's it been like for you now? Are you an 18 a day guy, a 9 and 9? Does Mitch hate you come Wednesday because he's been carrying the bag for 6 hours each day? What's your routine look like?
I think Mitch probably has the easiest caddy job out of all the players. I'm pretty easy. I don't know. We went and played 9 holes. We played 9 holes Monday, like at 3 o'clock, just fast. Didn't practice, warmed up, hit balls for 10 minutes and went to the tee, played 9. Today we had a money game with a couple guys and played at like, I think we teed off at 9:45 and it was the longest practice round ever. Probably just under 6 hours, it felt like, and
don't miss
played 18 and left right after. And tomorrow I'm gonna play 9 holes. I don't know when yet. And I usually like going back to the course Wednesday at night to do my practice. It's just really busy out here always, so I enjoy going at like 6 o'clock at night and practice till 8. Just, you know, kind of do my prep and, I wouldn't say I over practice, but I'm efficient and get the things done that I want to get done and get going. So.
Well, the question we need answered is, did you win the money game?
We did win the money game.
There you go.
Me and, Stuart McDonald, nice. Fellow Canadian.
Are you gonna tell us how much money, or is that a secret?
I can tell you the game that we played and you could guess.
Okay. Well, we accept that offer.
We played $5 a hole and $5 birdies.
Damn.
Combined. So me and Stu against two other guys.
Damn. I'm like Austin Johnson at math. So you made $5,000. There you go. That's a good.
That's a lot of birdies. Hey, one question I have for you, which I had actually a listener send along, and you know, it's probably right as far as him to ask that. But how often do you replace your wedges? Because you probably hit them more than anyone I know.
I would say probably every couple months, maybe. I got new wedges at the restart, I guess. So I've played 6 or 7 weeks with them, and I'm probably going to get some new wedges maybe next week. I mean, when I practice, I would say I hit a lot of wedges, and I enjoy the short game area. So my 60 degree gets beat up badly. The wedges wear out kind of quickly.
Well, we'll leave it with this. What's going to feel longer, the next year and a half till you lock up that PGA Tour card, or the next 5 months before the Toronto Maple Leafs start a season again after that abysmal finish to the season we'll call the 2019-2020 season?
It's so painful. I know. It's so painful. I thought that overtime game, when they blew the lead, I thought they were done for sure. And then they did the exact same thing to them the next night. And then I don't know. They need some defense. That's their problem. They need somebody or two defense. But I don't know. I'm upset with the Leafs right now. So I'm saying the PGA Tour card will be longer. I could care less when the Leafs come back.
I think that's the right answer. we're rooting for you. You're one of our favorites. Thanks again for coming on, Taylor. It's just around the corner before you lose that Mr. T2 title and we get the next Canadian winner on the Corn Ferry Tour. So go get him this week in Idaho, and we'll chat with you soon.
Love it. Awesome. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Taylor for joining us on the podcast yet again. Just anytime now, this guy's gonna make it happen. You know, he's clearly confident, as you heard in the interview, and one of our favorites, you know, one of the guys that actually wanted to come on our podcast and sent us a request, where instead of me bugging whoever over and over until they just say, finally, just shut up and get rid of my number.
Yeah, he's got so much potential. It's just going to be fun to see that play out over the next couple of years.
Yeah, you know, I was telling you a story. I ran into a junior kid today. You know, maybe potential is not the word I would use, but, you know, it's just nice to see people love golf. Like, Taylor clearly loves golf. And I ran into this kid. I was walking in the car after my practice, and he's got this big smile on his face. I was like, what's up? And he's like, oh, I shot 90 today in the junior event. I was like, awesome. Like, was that good? He's like, well, I was happy, but I just don't know where I stand yet. Hopefully, awesome. Hopefully it's good. It was great. And it's just like, you know what? Like, that's what golf's about. Like, he, you know, shot 90. He probably has kids his age out there that are shooting 68, and but he's just happy with his 90. And I think that's the key, is we just gotta stop worrying. Golf's supposed to be fun, and he was going out to practice because he's having so much fun. Just big smile on his face, got a Coke, and he's ready to go. It just made me remember what it was like to be a kid.
I love that. I mean, you know, it's not all about club slams and going, darn it, I didn't reach my potential today. I mean, maybe that is for him. That's a big deal for him. That's awesome. That gets me fired up to want to play more.
Yeah, but it got me thinking. Golf's supposed to be fun. And maybe, you know, golf, the game of golf and all the rules in golf, sometimes, you know, to be fair, isn't fun, right? There's just some dumb ones that, you know, you hit a great drive down the middle of the fairway and you know, you end up in a divot and you can't take it out. And it's like, well, come on. Like, why should I be punished? But instead, we're gonna have a little fun here. We're gonna talk about a random rule change. But it has to be something fun, something different, something that will never, ever happen, but we both believe will make it fun. And then we're going to talk some gear after that, which we're gear nerds. And, you know, we'll play a little game after that before we hit the mailbag and the tip of the week, as per usual. So let's start with this random rule change idea, Scott. Why don't you go first? Do you understand what we're doing here, correct?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, modifying rules is
a passion of yours.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's a good finish of the sentence. It's always interesting to think about how the game could be played differently to make it more fun. I always think about sometimes people playing matches, and I see them get up there all the time, and they're worried about their strokes and how much this is their difference, and, you know, they're worried about that math. And I thought, you know what? Why not have it a little bit more interesting as far as, you know, those strokes? How about, instead of just, you know, counting the difference in between, use those strokes so that you make the player replay that many shots during the round, except for on the 18th. So for an example, you know, two guys play, one's a six, one's a two, other guy's giving guys four shots. He just gets four shots during the round where he gets to make the other player replay the shot. So it just squeezes out a little bit more pressure, makes the game a little bit more interesting. Now, you know, obviously, it doesn't have to be a you know, hard and fast rule in the game, but it could be. You know, maybe it's just a game, but I think that's kind of a neat way to tackle the differences between player strokes.
Oh, can you imagine? Maybe a 50-foot bomb for a birdie, and you're just stoked. You're like, you just give the replay, redo, and exactly. Like, are you serious? And then I got to go back, and then they three putt it, and that's a great idea. I love that. I'm down to play you in that anytime, because I obviously will be getting the
replays.
The replays against you, so I'm 100% down. Now, this one, I'm not even going to claim it as my own. This is where this whole idea came from, and I'm going to call it that's one rule. So everyone's seen it where, you know, you tee up a ball and you're setting up your driver, you accidentally hit it off the tee, right? It happens all the time. Everyone accidentally hits it off.
I do it all the time.
And every single time, there's one person in the group, they always say, that's one, right? So imagine this. The next time you do it, you know, it's a par five, right? Say there's there's like 100 yards over water. You got a par five. You accidentally hit it over the tee. It doesn't count for one stroke, but where the ball lands cannot move and you can't change clubs. So that means you cannot re-tee
it.
And you're now holding whatever club you are in your hand. Oh. And you have to hit that next shot from there. Would be chaos. Oh. Can you imagine? I'm trying to think of a good finishing hole where there's just a ton of carry that you got to go over.
Well, even like 18 at your course where, you know, you've got a bit of a forced carry. If all of a sudden I
220 carry.
Yeah.
Right?
If all of a sudden I'm setting up with a driver and I knock it off the tee, you know, pull that tee out. Now I've got to hit a driver off the deck right there. I mean, the superintendent's going to be really ticked with us because you're going to see some nasty divots in the tee boxes, but oh my word. What? Oh yeah. That's,
both of these rules really hurt you.
They do. They really hurt me. So, yeah, that'd be fun to play both of those.
Yeah, no, I love it. And I think this would be
once.
A fun segment. What we'll do is we'll clip this little part. We'll make sure we get that out on the social media, and we want to hear from everybody else. What random, fun, crazy rule change idea would you have if you could? And let's make some games out of it. And who knows, maybe one day we'll throw these rules into the Flagstick Open or a different tournament that we host just for fun, because we love chaos on this podcast, that's for sure. Let's step away. We played kind of a game there. We got some news, some noteworthy stuff. We're gear nerds here. TaylorMade came out with some new irons. Mizuno came out with some new irons. Cleveland's got some putters in place. Tyler's got a nice new wedge. Where is your head at? Because I have for years talked about TaylorMade's irons and those muscle cavities from 2012 that I just can't get over. 2008, I forget which one. And they've finally done them. They've come back out with another set. And TaylorMade, if you're listening, you know, just send some my way. I don't care what they look like. They can be left-handed at this point. Those are great looking set of irons.
Yeah, it was kind of hard to even sit on those for a while. I've been sitting under embargoes for a little bit for some of this equipment, and for all of it to come out at once was kind of crazy this week. But three new TaylorMade irons. Obviously, they've got a muscle back, a muscle cavity, and then the 770, which is kind of a smaller version of the 790, and it just has a lot of refinements. And I saw one of their media staff did a Twitter poll and with all the irons, and actually, a lot of people indicated the 770 would be their favorite over the
pretty
MC.
Pretty nice. They look pretty nice, yeah.
So a lot of people love that hollow body performance of the P790s, and they just wanted it in a more compact shape, a little thinner top line, and that's what they've done with the 770s. So these will be out on retail shelves about September 4th, and we'll have more on them as well. Actually, Matt Bovey, who's the lead for a product, we want to have him on as far as the product in the iron category for TaylorMade, and looks like he'll come on here at some point and tell us a little bit more about them. They also had some Tiger Woods wedges that came out today, and also another version of their Spider putter, which is called the FCG, which is basically more like looks more like a mallet, but acts more like a blade design. It's got a lot of the mass pushed forward. So these are the fall introductions for TaylorMade. And yeah, it's been a busy, busy week for equipment.
It really feels like TaylorMade's making a push into the iron and wedge game, where before it felt like, you know, you knew TaylorMade as that wood company. Now what they're doing is they're actually trying to invest in the irons and putters and wedges, which, you know, for a long time, I wasn't in love with some of the things they came out with. And now this set, you know, they're not paying me to say this, I can tell you that. No ads on this. I was just thoroughly impressed from all three lines. The wedges look great. The putters have been great for the last couple of years. But Mizuno has been a brand I've loved for years and years. And those new set of JPX 921s, they caught me a little bit. I'm not going to lie. I got caught looking.
Yeah. I think a lot of people did. I mean, they had a lot of success with 900 and 919 in their JPX line in both the Forged, the Tour, Hot Metal, and Hot Metal Pros. So those four lines. And here's a cool part, and especially we'll flip back here to the TaylorMade one. The TaylorMade ones are all available in left-handed as well. So Canadians will be certainly happy about that, especially to be able to get a blade, that MB, because a lot of people like that P730 and couldn't get that in left-handed. Same thing goes for Mizuno here. You got some lefty options in there as well. But yeah, clean looking. People know, we talked about Brooks. Brooks is a guy who, you know, not under contract, but grabbed their irons and used them to win four majors. We're seeing a lot of non-contract players put the Mizuno clubs in their bag, kind of like they did in the 1990s when they were actually, you know, running up the iron counts on tour.
Nike logos on them.
Yeah. Yeah. So, So for them to, you know, to have the success that they're having right now, I mean, this is just the next little push. And I think what they've done with most of them is, you know, give them a little bit more forgiveness, a little better turf interaction. So there is enough as far as the advancements, but they haven't gone away from the things that have brought them success in the iron game in the last two generations for them.
I agree. Now let's hop into putters a little bit. We talked about TaylorMade coming out with a new Spider. Cleveland in the putter market. I think Cleveland's been sneaky in the putter market of late. They're a very affordable putter that have that, you know, nice feel to them, no insert on them. And these new Huntington Beach soft premier lines, they look slick as well. And, you know, I'm looking at just their standard blade here. They got kind of that number seven looking one, similar to the Justin Thomas, Scotty Cameron out there, but just at a reasonable price.
Yeah, I think that's a big thing for them is that, you know, Cleveland is obviously, you know, wedges is their big thing, but they want to be in that short game market. And I think they've done the right thing here. We obviously saw a lot of moves in the market. We saw a lot of $400, $500, $600 putters. So there is obviously a demand. Cleveland is a trusted name, so people are going to look at that. And if people can pick up something for under $200 Canadian, you know, $159, I guess, in the U.S., yeah, you know, get some of the classic shapes here. And you're right. You know, the models they've had the last little while, great feel to them, great look to them. This is just an advancement of what they've been doing the last few years.
And these putters are, they're black. They look great. Speaking of looking great and blacking out their clubs, titles, SM8 wedges. What do you know about these, Guy?
Yeah, well, obviously the SMA model was the new model that were introduced. And a lot of people like the jet black finish that was available previously in the SM7. I know that because I've seen some of those in my bag themselves. But they're offering this special edition that also has a blacked out shaft and a blacked out grip as well. So a lot of people kind of like that, you know, blacked out murdered look. And they're really solid. I mean, you look at them, no glare. And I'm going to tell you right now, here's a little secret. When this podcast comes out, there's probably going to be even more Titleist products coming out that are blacked out as well.
Ooh, and if this hasn't come out, we're probably getting sued.
Well, I'm definitely under an embargo, but by the time this comes out, we'll be on the edge. But so people should look for that.
You can go into hiding probably long enough. That's okay. That's it for the gear talk this week. A lot more gear coming out. I think this was that who's gonna break first. And, you know, I think a lot of companies, you're going to see new stuff coming out. You know, every brand had their stuff. They just held off because of COVID. But I think they didn't realize like golf's going to become even more popular than ever. So hopefully we see some new stuff from, you know, the Pings of the world, more Titleist stuff. I'm sure Callaway everywhere there, you're going to see some new equipment, which, you know, we're equipment geeks. We love that stuff. Why don't we hit a quick game, Scotty? I gave you one. Now it's your turn. We'll wrap it up with a game, then we'll take a quick break. We'll hit the mailbags. What do you got this week? You're our game guy.
Well, I was digging around trying to figure out some things we could do, maybe a little bit of fun. But, you know, I thought about the profession game. One of the things that happens all the time when you're interviewing players is sometimes you ask them kind of, what would you be doing if you weren't a golfer? And, you know, they have obviously their own answers, but some of the media sit and speculate sometimes too and go, man, you know what? That person would probably be that. So I thought the profession game would be something fun. I'm basically going to pick three pro players. You're going to do the same, and you get to choose what profession you think they would have if they were not a golfer. You can explain maybe why you think that as well. So
I love it.
All right, let's start. I'm going to go for an obvious one right from the start because it's somebody we've been talking about on the show. Brooks Koepka. I mean, what would Brooks Koepka be doing if he was not a golfer?
Okay. I feel like I'm just going, when you give me these, I'm going with my first answer. So Brooks Koepka would be working at a supplement shop. he would call you bro. He would tell you about all the great weight gainers and all the great creatines you can get. And then after you buy, he's going to whisper to you that you can get the illegal stuff if you meet him behind the dumpster, behind the bay after his shift's over at 9 o'clock.
Awesome. I love protein.
I know you love protein. I love protein too.
Yeah, protein rocks. Are you guys talking about protein? I love protein.
Yeah, yeah, that's what Brooks would do if he wasn't a golfer.
All right. You want to give me one, or do you want to?
Yeah, let's stick on the more. Let's stick on the Brooke change or Brooke idea here. Brooke Henderson, what would she be doing if she's not a golfer? Now you have a you've known her forever, we'll see where this one goes.
There is no doubt in my mind that Brooke Henderson would be a great school teacher. She loves kids. She loves being around kids. She's got that big smile. She's so gentle. She's much like her mom. She just really cares about people. And like, there's no doubt. There's no other situation I could probably put her in than being a school teacher. I really couldn't. I can't see her do high school because, you know, it'd be hard for her to kind of get mad at the kids and tell them to really settle down. It's going to be grade school for sure.
I like it.
All right, next one for you. We're going to stick with the LPGA side of things. Lexi Thompson.
Man, I struggled with this for a bit. I had to do some research, and what I learned about Lexi the most is she'll speak up when she has to. She fights for what she believes is right. She's big into mental health. She's big into, you know, equality and things like that. This is a politician I will get behind.
Wow.
Lexi Thompson for president 2028.
The purpose of this video today is to let you know who I am. First thing is, I am not cutting my hair. I'm not changing the way I dress. I refuse to wear a suit. I have a judgment against me from some down there in Florida. I built one of the biggest facilities and the nicest facilities for exotic animals in this country as far as a private individual goes. And don't forget, I am now stepping my foot in the ring to run for president.
I don't know. That's just the first thing that came to my mind. You know, you look back to, you know, how she was sick of the way people treated others on social media.
I like that.
You know, she spoke out on a ton of different things. Big Lexi fan, and I would vote for her come 2028 without even having a passport. I'll mail in my letter, the thing that Trump's all worried about anyway. We're not getting too political now, but that's
right. All right, you'll mail it in. Perfect.
Yeah. All right, your next one. This guy was in the mix, sort of, not really. Justin Thomas. I can tell you this, he ain't working at the Popeyes.
No, he's not at the Popeyes. That's why, you know, and no offense to anybody that's in this profession, but I see this guy in a short-sleeved checkered shirt, dress shirt, with a pocket protector. He's just going to either be a tech nerd or an accountant. He's just going to be one of those guys that you call into the office to come and help you out because, you know, your mail has gone sideways and you're like, JT, get in here.
Here comes little 5'7" JT, 120 pounds, wearing a small button-up shirt, but it looks like a double X. I got you.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Hey, guys. Sorry to interrupt. I just wanted to say goodbye to everyone. Through Teach for America, I'm going to go down to Detroit and teach inner city kids about computers.
Not now.
Oh, yeah, it's just my friends are on the car waiting, so I thought I would.
Fellas, what's this guy's name again?
I don't know. Is it Shadow or Garth? It's something weird.
My name is Nick.
Okay, last one for you. Brant Snedeker, very unique guy, great player, obviously has his own way about doing things. You know, he's got that Southern drawl to him, but where do you see Brant Snedeker working if he was not a golfer?
Brant Snedeker would work at a bowling alley that also runs bingo. So he's going to, when you come in at night, up until bingo starts, he's the guy behind the counter. He's got your shoes. He owns the place. Get you your shoes. But then he's double dipping. He's going, he's reading the numbers off at the bingo hall right after. Like, this is, I can just see it, you know, down somewhere down the south, just a big happy smile on his face. He just loves people coming into his shop. It's one shop for all, his bowling and his bingo. Loves the old people coming in, loves the kids coming in, lives for it. He's a bowler and bingo guy.
I'm slamming it tonight. You guys are dead in the water.
I love it. That one's awesome. That's perfect. Either that or a server at Ruby Tuesdays, right?
Okay, that's fair. Yeah. All right, last one. And I can tell you, being a caddy or a math teacher is not this for him. Dustin Johnson. What do you got for Dustin if he wasn't playing golf?
I didn't think about this one too hard, but I didn't want to be, you know, too stereotypical. But, you know, if you've ever been to Cocoa Beach and you've been to Ron John's, their big surf shop there, this is definitely the dude that's working at the counter at the surf shop forever, forever. Like, he gets there. He's worked there since he's 14. He's going to be there till he's 95 years old.
Oh, he's the guy from Forgetting Sarah Marshall that gives surfing lessons.
How long have you lived out here? Man, I don't know. I quit wearing a watch when I moved out here.
Wow, that's so cool.
Yeah. No, like, my cell phone has a clock on it, so I don't really need it.
100%. This is the guy. Not a care in the world. You know, just goes through life doing whatever he wants. Doesn't worry about anything and just, you know, lives a great life and just is oblivious. And I think that just fits his personality. And you know what? He'd probably be great as your surf instructor because you just, you know, you wouldn't care. And hey, if a shark's coming to eat you, he probably wouldn't panic.
Hey, look, man, if you're attacked by a shark, are you going to give up surfing?
Probably, yeah.
I love that kid. That was great. The guys and gals that we gave them jobs, you know, say for maybe Brooke and Lexi, we let them off easy, but the others might not be too happy with us, but hey, you can't win them all. Where we do win them all usually is the mailbag each week. So why don't we grab a quick break? We'll hit the mailbag and then we'll grab a final tip of the week before we head into the Flysick Open. Oh, I'm not ready.
All right, welcome back to the mailbag, one of our favorite segments every week. We appreciate your questions. Please keep them coming in on all our social media channels. We've got some great ones this week, and I think Steph and I are going to enjoy answering some of these. So let's get started. Obviously, a big story this week was the play of Colin Morikawa winning the PGA Championship. One of our listeners wants to know, how many wins majors do you see Colin Morikawa winning in his career?
For the record, when I said earlier that this would be in the mailbag, I didn't even look at the mailbag.
Sure.
I didn't even open it. And here it is. Called it. We get this every time. It's a fair question. I think he's a great player. But, you know, look at Jordan Spieth right now. When he had won three majors that quickly and puked away that green jacket, you know, people probably thought, like, this guy's on pace for 10 to 12. And he hasn't won since he won that Open Championship 3 years ago. So Colin Morikawa, who knows? You know, these guys lose their golf swings. They get injured. They're playing a lot. Look at Jason Day, right? Like, this guy got injured after just a hot, hot couple of years where he was winning everything. Who knows? If I have to put a number on it, I think, let's say 4-20, right? And that's like an amazing career.
That 4-20 would be pretty big, I think. Yeah, I mean, that would be a huge career. I mean, if you stack it up against some of the greats of the game, that would be getting up there as far as kind of mid-level for some of those top players. So you're right. This is a really hard one to predict. It's really easy to get into the prediction game, especially after this player has done so much in those first 27 pro starts. I'll be conservative. I'll go two majors, 10 wins. He might certainly surpass that. But you know what? The one thing that we don't want to do is heap expectations on him. And that's what he's going to have to deal with in the next little while. If he has a little bit of a lull, you're right. He's going to end up like Jordan Spieth, where everybody's going to be going, well, what's wrong with Colin? What's going on with him? Or, you know, things are going to happen at a different pace for every person, every player. He certainly could go through a lull. Heck, he could win the next four majors.
Right? Like, yeah, it's not out of the question. He's playing so good, and we have so many majors coming up. You're right. He could win if he won the U.S. Open, would you be shocked right now? Like, you've got to be a ball striker to win the U.S. Open. So,
yeah. Yeah, I think we have to see how he goes through and plays each of the majors first and to see kind of, you know, how his game plays out in all those different places and all those different formats. You know, I want to see this guy playing all the different majors and in different styles of golf courses. So, you know what, I'll go there. I'll go conservative. I'll go 2-10. Leave it at that. Certainly could be way, way higher. But hey, who knows? He might be done. I don't think he is. But
I mean, it would be a bold take considering he's got three now in under a year on the PGA Tour, to the point where it's saying like 10 wins seems super low. But as we said, golf's hard. So Who knows?
Yeah, it is, definitely. All right, on to the next one here. What makes a golf course club attractive to you guys? So, you know, we talk a lot on this podcast about golf courses, what we like about courses, what, you know, but this person really wants to know what makes it attractive.
It's welcoming. It's got, you know, this sounds ridiculous. It's got good range balls. Like it doesn't
it's not ridiculous.
Like, it doesn't even need to be a great call. Range. It can be a field. I don't really care that much. It can be a field, but the balls, like, that for me is something that's important. The golf course is fun to play. I don't really care if it's a challenge or not. It's just fun. But I think of those three, if you only gave me one, it's that welcoming and a good experience. And I think golf, I've talked about it so many times, it's not that, you know, we talked about our experience at TPC. This is a mecca. But I said, as we went along, and not because we were playing with the owner of the course, no detail is lost on these people. Mm-hmm. You know, from ordering lunch is so simple. That it's like, here's the four sections. Everything in that section is the same price. Like, they think about everything. Everybody you ran into had a smile on their face. Again, we were with the owner. Who knows? But, like, prior to meeting the owner, it was the same way. Like, hey, yeah, this where you go. Yeah, welcome. It's a great day. Like, everyone's just in a great mood. And that's what I think I like. I've been to golf courses where you pay $200 to show up and you get to the first tee and they're like, yep, $200. Okay, yep, get out of here, right? And they don't care. They just want your money and get out of there because their golf course is ranked on the top 100. Not here. That's what I loved about TPC, and that's what I love about any golf course.
Yeah, I think what you're talking about there is the culture, and the culture is really set by the people that work there, the people that are the leadership that are there. And you're right. They set the tone for the experience that you're going to have there, whether the golf course is, you know, 5,000 yards and barely has any grass to 7,200 yards and ready to host a major. I mean, you want to feel comfortable there. And, you know, you're right. Practice facility just has to be adequate. We want to see something where people have, you know, giving it their attention. It doesn't have to be the greatest in the world, but you're right. They care about it. They care about the people that are coming there, and you feel that. So that when you leave, you go, you know what? I felt welcome. I want to go back there because it felt safe. It felt enjoyable. It wasn't any time that I was there that I felt uncomfortable. And really, that's what it's all about, the culture of the place more than anything. All right, on to the next one here. How long do you think is ideal for a warm-up for a tournament round? Now, I've got my thoughts on this, but you're about to play a tournament this week. You know, what's ideal for you? It's a little different these days because obviously we've got COVID-19 rules and regulations of how long you can be at a golf course and prepare. But, you know, obviously we've got a listener here that's probably starting to play some tournament golf and probably wondering, you know, what's ideal for a warm-up?
If you're looking for a person to watch prepare for a tournament coming up, and this weekend you need to see it this weekend, do not come watch me prepare for this tournament. this is a cottage weekend that I'm disguising with a golf tournament in between. Day one warm-up could depend on how late Friday night goes, and I can tell you day two warm-up definitely depends on how day one I play. So that, you know, all joking aside, for me, I like to start with a couple chips, a couple putts. I might hit, you know, spend 20 minutes on the range and then a couple more putts and away we go. Just try to keep it simple. I think the key here is to warm up. So that does change depending on conditions. Like, I've played in a Ryder Cup thing in October before, and I had to go to the range for like 40 minutes prior because I needed to physically warm up before I went out for the tournament, which if you picked up on it, maybe you wouldn't. I just think of the caddies in these situations. Guys got to the golf course a lot earlier at TPC Harding Park than they probably will at the US Open in a couple weeks just because of how cold it was. So just little things like that, that, you know, your coach probably teaches you, and Scott, as the coach of this program, we'll probably touch on right now.
Yeah, for me, you know, this is probably more personal for my warm-up, but, you know, even for players as well. I mean, I try to make sure that you get there, that you have enough time that you're active the whole time, that you're not just sitting around, standing around. I mean, it is a warm up. Again, it's not a practice session. People have to realize and understand that. Too often I see people get there and they're practicing before they go and they play their tournament round. And that's not really what you want to do. So go through your routine as far as hitting golf shots on the range, as far as full swing, go through your whole bag, go over, hit some chips and putts, get a feel for the speed of the greens that day, be really controlled as far as that's concerned. Personally, I like to get to the range last for sort of a second session and hit the club I'm going to hit for my tee ball. And kind
yeah,
of
I like that too.
And that's, yeah, and that's kind of my last thing to do. But I like to take care of a lot of the other things beforehand. So you're going to be busy when you get to the golf course. So things like yardage books, marking golf balls, stuff that you have in your golf bag, snacks, all that stuff, try and take care of that the night before so that you're not doing that in your warm-up period. So basically, when you go, maybe you do, you know, 20 minutes on the, you know, the putting green, get a feel for your speed, some chips and putts, a couple of sand shots. You know, after a full range session, which may be a half an hour to go through your bag, zip back for another 10 minutes for last few shots, just to really feel like you're ready to go as far as your tee shots. Really hard to go from the putting green right to the tee. So it's easier if you can just sneak in a couple of those shots, hit those tee ball, you know, maybe it's a three wood off the tee. Well, hit a couple of three woods until you hit a nice solid one. Then you march through tee just before you get to play and away you go. So I think for most people, probably an hour. But make sure that hour is busy and active. You're not standing around. You can do your stretching in your room or at home on the way there. You maybe do some light stretching when you get there. But take care of your other things that you have to do before you get to the golf course. All right, on to the next one here. How do I get to play a private golf club without being a member? That's one I get a lot, and I've heard a lot over the years. But what are your thoughts on that one?
Well, if we knew the answer, we would have played Augusta by now.
Well, I mean, not any. I mean, you're talking about people that, you know, there's a lot of people that have never played a private golf club. They play public golf, semi-private golf, and they don't know how to access a private club.
Yeah, I'm going to give you a serious answer and then a, if this is one I really want to play, but I know I can't afford to actually be a member answer that Scott might not agree with, but I'm giving it to you anyway. So the first one, be friends, find friends, a member that you might know and be friends with, and then go and ask them to play there, right? We have one private club in our area, and that's the only way you and I are able to get on is get an invite from a member. You know, it's lucky. My crazy idea, and I've tried and I've been successful a couple times, and now I'm outing myself. I'm going to have to create a fake email, but I have emailed course, be like, hey, I'm new to the area. I'm looking at different golf courses. I would love to try out your golf course.
That's fair.
And maybe it's best for me, for my membership. Me and my family just moved here, blah, blah, blah. Right. If you're younger, maybe get your parents to write that. But I've done it. I've had success doing it. I'm not going to say where, because that course clearly knows I'm not living in Phoenix, Arizona. But yeah, no, it works. And but sometimes maybe you actually are interested in doing it. Not a lot of clubs will go for it. I think you're going to get like a 20% success rate. But hey, it's worth the shot. But I think the easiest way, meet a member.
Yeah, I mean, meeting a member, like you said, that's probably the best. The other side of it, yeah, that's not too far off. I mean, so for some people, they might be considering joining a private club. So, you know, you don't know if you don't ask. The other one as well, think about tournament play. A lot of private clubs, even the most private, ultra-privates, often host a charity event. You know, I know some of the ultra privates might only have one charity event in a year, but find out how you can get in that tournament. There might be a way that you can get involved with it. Maybe you can volunteer at it, and maybe you can get some access as far as an invite that way. Other thing is competitive golf. There's a lot of times that, you know, private golf clubs will host an association event, whether that's your state or your province. You know, qualify. You can work your way in. I saw someone today mentioned, you know, their son played in the Northern California Golf Association qualifier. It was $150, and they're getting to play. They qualified, and they're getting to play Spyglass twice, which would be $850 for those two rounds. So, you know, it's not private, but it's part of that group that's there. But the same thing, you know, something that's out of reach, that's a good way to do it for you know.
I've thought about that for like USGA events. Like, I'm obviously not have any chance to get in, but. Sure. Oak Hill, for example, has hosted mid-AM qualifiers, and it'll be like $100 to play Oakhill. Yeah. I think if you go with a member, it's like 200. So like those are the, that's a great idea. I forgot about ideas like that's great. That's why, you know, that's why you get that seasoned vet on your podcast. You don't just get idiots like me talking.
That's why we have two of us, so we can give different perspectives.
Yeah, you can give the moronic idea and then the actual right idea.
Hey, you didn't start talking about how to climb the fence, so that's all right.
Yeah, that was my third idea.
That was your other one, I'm sure of it. All right, last one here. Is an indoor golf simulator a wise investment if you have young golfers who love the sport?
Are you asking so you can convince your wife or your husband that this is why you need it, whoever sent this question in? Because I think they're a great investment regardless. Or maybe this is Andy McWilliams, who does install these. He's just trying to get some free publicity out here. If I had the cash, I'm investing it. And that, I think, maybe in a dream scenario for the next house, I got that kind of pre-built into the house, and maybe it's on the mortgage and everything. I think
it's not in the cottage.
No, I don't think it's going to be at the cottage, but you know, that's where I get away from golf. But no, this is I think it's a great idea. If you have kids that are interested, get them playing all year round. I think the key, if I'm going to guess where Scott's coaching perspective is like, can you have too much golf? Give them a break, get them playing other sports as well. But I love the idea. Is it actually a good investment? Probably from a return on investment standpoint, no. But from a fun standpoint, yeah, nailed it.
Yeah, for fun, for sure. I mean, a lot of the simulators now also have other games and things that you can do, you know, kicking soccer balls, dart games, other sport games and stuff like that. But yeah, you sniffed me out pretty good. I would say that, you know, even if your kids are serious about golf, don't just have them there playing golf nonstop. And I mean, you know, if they love it, for sure, but just try to balance it with some other things, which I think, again, it makes it neat. Some of these simulators have soccer games where you can kick into the screen, do other sports and stuff like that. So looking at it as an investment, I wouldn't look at it as an investment. I just look at it as, you know, something that's part of your entertainment budget. Don't think of it as being an investment in the golfers to maybe, you know, work towards a scholarship or something like that. If they love the game, that's fine. If it adds something to your life as a family, certainly give it a whirl. There's ones now that are fairly affordable, a lot different than what it used to be. But yeah, I think it really varies for everybody. But, you know, just be careful that, you know, you don't have golfers in there just playing golf 10 hours a day, although Stefan would love that.
I'd be there. I'd have one thing to note. I maybe you've done it as well. Like, I developed awful tennis elbow from hitting off a mat playing too much golf in the winter time. So it is a great idea. You do want to spend a lot on those mats because, you know, the impact isn't the same as dirt. And they will strain your body parts differently. It's, you know, it's kind of like when the Blue Jays complain about the field being on concrete. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the same thing. So something to think about if you are doing it, that you do not go cheap on that stuff. I would rather go cheap on the actual system at first than the actual mats and stuff, because injuries can happen and they're not fun. I do not wish golfers, I think next to the back injury, elbow injuries are just, they're awful. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're irritating, and, you know, obviously they're debilitating as well. I mean, Mike Weir has known from suffering that. So yeah, you're right. Be sure that you're not overdoing it and make sure you invest properly, especially in those mats. All right, that's the mailbag for this week. Again, reach out each week. We'll answer your questions. Send them along on all our social media channels, on Twitter, Instagram as well. You can find us Flagstick Golf. Certainly look forward to them every week, and certainly, you know, keep them fun too. It doesn't necessarily have to be something serious. Stefan's not going to give you all the tips of how to climb fences at golf courses, but you never know. Maybe he'll let you inside that someday and let you know all about how he gets on the ultra private.
I'm telling you, if you don't know how to climb a fence, that's a talent you need to have in life. And as a skateboarder in my youth and still try to dabble, you know, we always say never stop hopping fences. You never know what's on the other side of the fence. Now I feel like I'm promoting trespassing, and I feel like that might get me into trouble. What won't get me into trouble is getting you to become a better golfer, which I'm not going to help with, but Scott always does. So let's hit up the tip of the week, and then maybe we'll see what I can learn going into Equinel this weekend and the Flagstick Open.
All right, simple one here. I really want to talk a little bit about upper body tilt and the fact that people need it. A lot of people don't realize sometimes when they get set up for the golf club that they sort of stand straight up. But, you know, golf is a very athletic activity. We've got to be prepared to move. We also have to understand that the golf club is going to be on a plane relative to our upper body and relative to our spine. So if you're standing straight up and down, chances are the club is just going to work around you and not up and down at an angle. End up in a lot of situations where you're going to get the club working its way in a little bit too shallow. It's going to really affect your contact. So the other thing that happens as well, when you get a good amount of upper body tilt, a proper amount, it also engages your hips, your pelvis. It gets them activated and gets your lower body moving properly as well. So have a good look at that. Make sure you have enough upper body tilted address throughout the swing. You can work with your coach on that. Real simple, just to, you know, bring up the look of some of the PGA Tour players, LPGA Tour players, replicate what they've got. That'll give you a good starting point. Maybe you've got a mirror that you can kind of look at, put some lines on as far as tape or something like that. And I think you'll be off to a good start there. And then just work with your PGA coach on that. And you'll see that it's a very important aspect to better contact, a better ball striking, and even more distance as well.
Something I got to think about. I sometimes get a little too close, get that big block out to the right because I get stuck. So good reminder that way. Thank you again, Scotty, for that. Now, was touched on, it's Flagstaff Open this week. Let's wrap it up with this. What do you expect out of me? Like, what do you want us to come back this week? Now, not high expectations. I'm not winning it because I'm in the C flight, so I get those forward tees. I'm really excited about moving up this year. I'm at that brittle age.
30, brittle age.
30. I'm ready to move up. I've been waiting for this, just like you've been waiting for the seniors tees. What expectations of me? Like, I'm your prized possession, right? I'm your student out there.
Yeah, you know what? I'd love to see you make sure that you're, you know, sub 80 every day.
Okay.
I would be nice to see you sneaking around there. That's kind of 75, 76 ish. Maybe
now,
that's
just gonna... for the record, I haven't broke 80 in 6 weeks. So this is your.
Well, this is when you're going to be the show pony. How's that? So
right.
It's a good fair course setup. We got 120 quality players in from Ontario and Quebec. They're in from, you know, Windsor. They're in from Hamilton. They're in from Sault Ste. Marie, Quebec City, all over the place. A flight ends at, I think, about 1.9. B goes to about 5. You know, then we get into C, I think, goes to about 10, and then 10 and up from there for D. So going to be a good quality field. So you have your work cut out in your flight. But certainly, you know what? I think you're peaking. I think you're ready. I think it's time that your game just showed up. I mean, you might be playing through a fog that's affected by your cottage stay with you know, friends, but you know, you're gonna go out, you're gonna have a great time, which I think is what we really promote with this tournament. It is a competitive event, the Flagstaff Open Amateur Championship at Equinel, presented by TaylorMade and Adidas Canada, and we have some support as well by Levelware. We really appreciate that. But you know what, we want people to enjoy themselves, and I think that aspect of it is going to keep you a little looser, and it's going to lead to some great scores.
Yeah, fear the hungover golfer. You never know, right? Like, I've been there before. This isn't new for me. I'm looking forward to it. I just snuck my way into C, but I agree. I've been working hard with you. We've been going back and forth with some video stuff. I'm trying to get some length into my swing, get a little distance. It's one of my fears right now is I know I'm hitting the ball farther, but I don't know how far. I haven't been on a track, man, and well, since before COVID. So we're going to be working some things out in a practice round on Friday. I will have press conferences after each of my round on Saturday and Sunday. So make sure you follow me on Instagram at Steedorf. I will take Flagstaff and it will end up on the Instagram of Flagstaff. That remains to be seen. But you can look for how I feel my round went each day. But I feel like I'm turning the corner. I'm ready to take on the C flight. I'm ready to win. Does it count as a win? Like a first tournament
if win? Flight?
If it's just C flight? Sure. Like, okay, cool.
So it's not the PGA Championship, but you never know.
Okay, so I can add it to my resume of PGA Tour caddy and a tournament winner.
Yeah, C flight winner. Yeah, sure, that'd be awesome. Great combo.
Okay,
well, right on your LinkedIn.
I'll add to my LinkedIn. Well, that's it, folks. Thanks everyone for listening. Thanks Taylor for joining us. It was a fun episode this week, and we look to have more. We can't wait to hear from you all on your idea of a fun rule change. So make sure you tweet at Scotty at Flagstaff and tell us what you think, because we'll maybe one day we'll implement a full round of golf. Which, one last thing, I won our PGA championship bet last week. And it wasn't even, that. I don't think it was close. I absolutely whacked Scotty. So at some point in the next couple of weeks, you're going to hear all about Scott playing a full round completely by the rules, left-handed at the golf course of my choice. So looking forward to that. You're going to really struggle at the National. That's really unfortunate. all right, everybody, have a great day. We'll come back next week. We'll talk all about the Flagstaff Open, the Wyndham Championship, and who knows what else. Thank you for listening. See you next week. Slow motion in a day like today, my boat's lost in the ocean.